The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 12th of June, 2023. How are you keeping? How was your weekend? Are you all very well? I do hope you are. And I hope you're with us now for the next 3 hours in this show and throughout the day here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. The lines are open. We want you involved in the conversation, raising your own topics, passing on your own news, be it good or something that needs a bit of work on. The lines, as I say, are open. 086-6025000. That's your WhatsApps and texts. Give us a call on 07491 25000 if you want to speak to Caroline or Niamh working on the show today. And also emails to comments at highlandradio.com. So plenty coming up on the show, as I mentioned. We have a great competition running as well. I'll tell you about that after we look through the newspapers. We have a €100 one for all voucher. Is that what they're called? Yeah, it is. One for all voucher. We're going to give one of those away every day all this week. It's courtesy of our friends at Virgin Media. It's we're going to invite you on air to play a game. I'll let you know how you can get involved in that, as I say, just after we look through the newspapers. But that and so much more besides on the way. Let me grab my little chair that I have, a little chair that I put the papers on when I finished reading them. Okay, on to the Derry People Donegal News. The long-awaited defective concrete block redress scheme is expected to be implemented this week. Campaigners are hopeful the release of the final details and implementation of the redress scheme will go ahead on Wednesday following a fortnight's delay. The final details are expected to include clarification on accessing the scheme, revised redress rates, eligibility and conditions surrounding the repair and rebuild of homes impacted by defective concrete blocks. So there's lots of people will be waiting with bated breath to find out if this will work for them. It's not going to work for everyone, but for some it might be more tolerable than it is for others. But there'll be a lot of people waiting to see the finer details of this, I'm sure, come this week. Chairperson of the Microaction Group, Lisa Hone, said she hopes the government's announcement will provide impacted homeowners with some much-needed clarity. And of course, we'll be right across that in the run-up to and after Wednesday. You'll not miss a beat there. On to the Derry News now, an unstoppable by name and unstoppable by nature. That is Stage Beyond, the Derry-based theatre company for adults with learning disabilities. The members of the unique ensemble are preparing for curtain up on the variety show Unstoppable in the city's iconic St. Columb's Hall on Saturday, June 24th at 7:30pm. It's on to the Nationals now, and the Irish Independent covers a story we've covered locally here quite a bit over the years. Over 5,000 offers of social housing were refused in the past 2 years. So that's 2,500 per year, with a variety of reasons given, this according to an Irish Independent analysis. An average of 1 in 5 offers were turned down, with almost 25,000 offers of social housing made across 2021 and 2022. As many as 2 in 5 offers were refused last year alone, according to a county-by-county breakdown. Reasons for offers being refused included houses being too small, lacking in garden or parking spaces, or being located too close to an ex-partner. Lack of storage for motorbikes, which has been raised before, and bedrooms being too small were also among the reasons for nearly 5,000 social housing offers being declined in 2021 and 2022. So what do you think? Do you think those are adequate reasons? We had a mixture of views last time we talked about this. We are in a housing crisis. There are well in excess of 12,000 people homeless. Is it correct to be refusing the offer of social housing for the reasons that I've outlined? As I say, we're not trying to pitch one group of individuals against another. I'm just wondering if you believe it to be acceptable. So in Donegal in 2021, our rate is much higher here. Well, it was higher in 2021 and dropped in 2022. So in Donegal, there were 341 housing offers made. 101 of those were refused. So it's just shy of 1 in 3. The situation changed a little, but not much, in 2022. There were 301 offers of social housing, and 75 of those were refused. So just to give some examples, Sligo, would it be our nearest neighbours? Maybe quite comparable. They had 201 offers in 2021, 66 refusals. in 2022, 106 offers, 25 refusals. So a county with similar levels of offers would be Galway City. 395 offers there, 63 refusals. In 2022, 258 offers, 34 refusals. So we are more likely, it seems, to refuse the offer of social housing in this county. Maybe that's because the housing stock is not the right stock for the requirements. I don't know. Too near the main road for a small child was one reason given for a refusal. Too far away from school. Keeping of certain pets not allowed. Lack of public transport. So people had pets, were offered the house. They couldn't take the pets with them and decided that they didn't need the social house at that time then. Undesirable housing estate, antisocial behaviour, that comes up from time to time as well. Property only has one bathroom. I've only ever had one bathroom, but anyway. Don't like the location and there's no garden. Wanting to live near family and supports, which again is understandable. House is too close to an ex. Again, you can sort of get it. What do you think about that? 08660 25,000. On to the Irish Times now. And an increase in the number of university students commuting long distances means they are missing out on huge aspects of the college experience, such as involvement in clubs, societies and social life, the president of one of Ireland's largest universities has said. Professor David Fitzpatrick, president of Technological University Dublin, said more students were opting to commute for long periods rather than staying in digs or rooms rented out by homeowners. The evidence we have last year is that they were unfilled student digs places last year. But that's not the whole picture, because I think a lot more students are electing to commute rather than to move. Are they missing out, or is that their choice? Maybe they're benefiting from a supports at home, probably. I don't know. Never went, so I don't really have a great understanding of that. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Political unease is growing that the summer will be dominated by a war over pay rises for top civil servants. Yes, their bank balances are set to swell even further. Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue is expected to submit the results of a top-secret review of Mandarin structures by Dr. Donald de Butzler, the former chair of the Low Pay Commission. The review includes the current recruitment and pay determinations process for senior public service posts, including civil servant roles at assistant secretary grades and above. However, the review also includes the even more politically sensitive issues of the judiciary and political office holders, such as members of government, ministers of state, the attorney general, and the chair and deputy chairman of Dáil Éireann. So you can see when we start talking about their pay, how it's going to be very controversial. And there's some figures about who gets paid what. I won't ruin your cornflakes by reading them out to you at this time. Irish Daily Star tells us today, as do many of the papers inside, former junior minister Damien English will not face a standards watchdog investigation into the incorrect planning application that led to his resignation. Now, you would wonder, and I'm not into witch hunts, but you would wonder what the role of SIPO is if they don't see this a cause for investigation. The Meath West TD quit as a minister in January after apologising for failing to declare his ownership of a house in Castlemartin in Meath County Council when making a planning application in 2008. He left his role in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment following claims made about the planning application on the ditch. People Before Profit, Paul Murphy, made a complaint to SIPO. SIPO has replied to Mr. Murphy, saying Mr. English completed his annual declarations in line with the Commission's guidelines on compliance with the provision of the Ethics in Public Office Act 95 in 2001. So why did he resign then? Was that a wasted resignation if SIPO say he didn't do any wrong? But if he did, because he must have thought he'd done enough wrong to resign, why do SIPO not believe that worthy of an investigation? The Irish Daily Mirror this morning, leaving cert maths exam, which one student claimed even Einstein couldn't complete, has sparked a glut of complaints. Did you hear these complaints in your house after the exam at the week last week? Teachers have admitted the higher level paper one was challenging and unsettling. Some said their students were extremely disappointed that all their hard work had not prepared them for what they faced. They found question three, which featured logs, particularly challenging, as well as question four, which dealt with complex numbers. One candidate tweeted, "If I ever write an autobiography, I'm putting the Leaving Cert Maths paper one under the childhood trauma section." Now, I think how it is marked will be determined. It's determined by how tough the questions are. So hopefully it doesn't mean people are going to do really bad in that if they made a decent stab at it. But it's, was there much complaints in your houses from students who had to sit that paper? And very finally, I have no idea why, but I'm going to read it anyway. Drinkers can now smother themselves in the smell of a pint with a beer-scented deodorant. I can only presume that this is marketing. BrewDog has teamed up with personal care brand Fussy to create the roll-on fragrance ahead of Sunday's Father's Day. This is what they think of us, lads. That all we want for Father's Day is antiperspirant that smells like booze. Well, it has notes of hops and the tropical fruits, similar in the brewery's popular Punk IPA ale. BrewDog's chief marketing officer, Lauren Carroll, said for years people have been in turmoil over what to buy Dad on their special day. Shall I get him smellies? Shall we just treat him to his favourite tipple? I say, why not do both? So as I say, it is a bit of a marketing thing, but anyway. Never understood why you can get antiperspirant with 72-hour protection, really. Do people not wash for 72 hours? 24, maybe, if you're going to a concert or something, but 72, you're pushing it out a bit there. 3 days protection from antiperspirant, I don't know. Right, okay, so just before we go to a break and welcome our first guest onto the show, Virgin Media full fibre broadband has arrived in Donegal Town, in Donegal Town, in County Donegal. To celebrate it all this week on the 9 till noon show, we'll be giving away a €100 one for all voucher every day, courtesy of our friends at Virgin Media. Check out virginmedia.ie to see if you can avail of the new 2 gig full fibre broadband speed. Right, so we're going to take two of you on air. We're going to ask you a question each, and whoever answers the question fastest, providing both answer it correctly. They're not terribly difficult, but they're not like, you know, what is the sky blue or black? Actually, it is both blue and black, depending on day or night. What a terrible example, but you know what I mean. So you come on, we'll ask a question, and whoever answers it quickest wins the €100 voucher. It's simple as that. So if you want to come on and take part in our competition with a chance to win a €100 one-for-all voucher, get in touch with us now, WhatsApp or text your name, where you're from and your number to 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. So we'll ask two questions, that's all it is, and one of you will win a... What happens if both get it wrong, Caroline? Is it whoever answers... So, no, that doesn't work. What? Right, okay, we don't know. I think was a synopsis of what Caroline just said in my ear. Anyway, look it. We'll get there. Text us 086 60 25,000. We'll bring you on air. It's just one simple question, and one of you will win a €100 one for all voucher every day. Look, if you don't text, by the way, give us a call. We'll stick you in there as well. But preferably 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp or text number.
The newspapers are courtesy of Kelly Centra Mountaintop Letterkenny, the C-Store National Large Forecourt of the Year for 2022.
We welcome onto the programme now Paul McLoon, former director of FinHarps Football Club. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Good. How are you keeping, Paul?
I'm good, good, good. If you're talking to me on my health issues, quite good, actually. We had a great day on the cancer thing recently in Ballyshannon and with Relay, so we're very pleased as a county. Magnificent response from throughout the whole of Donegal, north, south, east and west. So congratulations to everyone involved, and thank you very much to the public for their support.
Yeah, hear, hear. I agree with you 100%. Right, Paul, we're speaking to you now with the other hat on, That is the development or the proposed development of the new FinHarps stadium. Effectively, and you're frustrated at the lack of progress here, or not from the club itself as such, but from processing the grant application. What is this current situation, and where do your frustrations lie?
Oh, I'm really talking to you because I'm an ex-public servant. Like, I worked at senior management level in the health services and the tourism sector, and I was helping out FinHarps since early 2017. With their proposal to move to a new stadium. I actually went on the board for 4 years and ceased that in July, but I'm 6 years involved. and it still hasn't been got over the line, and it just doesn't make sense to me. So I spoke to Mark Tighe, who's a Donegal town man, and he's also, of course, a reporter with the Sunday Independent. And I just talked as a public servant, as an ex-public servant, and my frustration is nothing takes 6 years. No matter, like, I'm more than anyone else would know about public service requirements. I know about public investment, about protecting, you know, state monies and all of that. But nothing I've ever been involved with in my public service life took 6 years to get over the line. And I just couldn't fathom that out. And that's my big frustration is that, you know, I've spoken to ministers for sport and all of that. This is what we used to do, either in health or tourism, is you rolled up your sleeves, you sat down with the civil servants and you sorted everything out. So you went into any issue with a solution-based approach. And I've been asking this for a couple of years with this particular program, and I'm frustrated that the civil servants just haven't got that proactive solution-based approach. And that's the summarise the answer to your question, Greg. That's where I stand.
So what are they doing that is frustrating this process such?
Well, in my estimation, and I'm pretty sure in this, it's, you see, the applicant for this, everyone thinks that FinHarps were the applicant for this money. No, they're not. It's the FAI or the applicant. And what we were doing as a project team, and I'm still a volunteer in that project team, we prepared the documentation for the FAI. And then the monies was awarded, which was $4 million, to the FAI. We then went to Donegal County Council and actually had to go to the board of the FAI themselves and secure another $1 million from them as match funding. So we did all that. We've supplied them with major documentation last November. Mm. And we thought that's that. And we got a letter, or rather the FAI got a letter last Thursday seeking further documentation. That's about the fourth time that has happened. And like you're talking about a 6.5 months delay since we put the submission in at the end of November. And this doesn't make sense to me, Greg, and that's the frustration. And I honestly think the problem is the scheme itself.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been echoed, hasn't it, by some within the FAI, that it's not just unique to this project, that something needs to be done to fast-track this. And, I mean, obviously, there has to be due diligence and it's public money and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, clearly, the foot-dragging has to, and the nitpicking has to stop.
Yeah, the 6 years doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter what you're dealing with in life. You wouldn't put up with this dragging on for such a length of time. And that's my great frustration. But I'm doing it. You know, I'm saying the FinHarps and people like that, just stay out of this. This is me talking as an ex-public servant that knows the system. I'm just saying to these guys, would you just roll up your sleeves once and for all and get this sorted? And politically, you see, the problem I really have is that everyone's telling me the same thing, and it's been acknowledged that there is a problem with the scheme. I do think this will, there'll be a lot of light shed on this in the coming weeks, because I think there's FOI requests gone into the Department of Sport just to tell us. So what I'm saying to them is, look, if you made mistakes, so be it. That's fine. We all do it in life. But let's just roll up our sleeves and get this over the line. And the people of Donegal deserve better treatment, because this stadium should have been built 10 years ago in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And my motivation as a Donegal person, my affiliation with FinHarps is over 2 years ago, but I'm still assisting them on the project team. But I just know when you're a senior public servant and you see something not happening, you just know there's something behind the scenes not right. And ministers have privately said to me that there's a problem with the scheme. But we're saying to them, so be it. That's okay. Just say there was mistakes made, but now we'll sort it. Because it's going to take the letter that came to the FAI last Thursday is going to take another 3 or 4 months to start out. There's that much documentation required. Mm. So this project cannot start until next year in my eyes, no matter what happens. But every cloud is a silver lining, Greg, in that the letter from the department went to the FAI and asked them twice in the letter to put up the match funding for this project. And uniquely that day, the FAA launched their scheme that they're going to secure $834 million for sport, $390 million for League of Ireland clubs getting their facilities upgraded. So 1% of that $390 million will sort the whole thing out for the Donegal Community Stadium. Mm-hmm. So it is within the powers now. So it's the department writing to the FAA, asking them just to give them a letter of guarantee that they will fund the balance of the stadium. So if the FAI do that with their new plans, then away we go.
Now, just to settle any confusion in my mind, I did see a quote from Ian Harkin, the chair of Finn Harps, who said that you don't speak on behalf of the club, and he hopes work on the new pitch can start next month. He strikes a different type of a tone to you. Can you explain?
Oh yeah,
are you on the same page? I know you're not speaking officially. You are speaking as an ex civil servant, but just to clarify.
I'm not. I'm most certainly not a spokesman for Finn Harps, nor do I want to be. I leave that to them good selves. I'm just telling you, as a public servant and knowing how the system works, there's not a chance in hell of any work starting on the pitch next month. That's maybe. Ian misinterpreted something from the FAA or something, but it's just not physically. We met as a project team last night. We went through the letter, and we know it will take 4 or 5 months to sort this out. But there is, as I said, a silver lining that if the FAA agree to the request from the department to put up the additional funding required, then away we go. So right. It really is within the powers of both the FAA and the Department of Sport to deliver this. The Department of Sport have already given the FAA $4 million for the project. So if the FAA, for instance, put up another $3 million, which, as I said, would be less than 1% of the national fund they're proposing for the League of Ireland, then we just go ahead and build a stadium. Mm-hmm. There's okay. No problem. And my motivation is as a Donegal person. As I said, I'm finished with Finn Harps as a board member 2 years ago. I am assisting them on the project, but I know how to get this delivered. So, everyone needs to be held accountable.
Okay.
So if something's delayed for 6 years, someone like me needs to say it. I didn't want any sporting organisation to say it because they'd be afraid of their lives, that their grant could be affected. So it's better coming from an independent person like me, because I don't put the grant in jeopardy. You know, this is FAA and that, but I'm just saying, as an experienced ex-public servant, that 6 years is far too long.
And listen, finally, you're giving it a voice, of course. You mentioned about ministers talking privately, and I think you said that was about the administration of these schemes in general. But do you think, given the fact that, you know, sports clubs can sometimes have to choose their words very carefully, that there should be more political advocacy to move this forward, embarrass the civil servants, if that can be done,
into speeding things up? I've tried to do that. What I'm saying to you will come as no surprise to local councillors and local TDs, but I got a phone call from the Minister for Sport to my house on the 1st of September last year, saying what I'm after telling you. The FAA appealed to me July 22, not to say anything publicly. I didn't. I listened to them. I waited another year and still nothing built in Donegal Community Stadium. So I've given everyone plenty of time to sort it. And they asked me not to speak a year ago. I didn't. And look, local politicians, everyone knows this. And I do think what you've requested is spot on, Greg, is let's get this over and done with. If someone made a mistake in the civil service, so be it. Mm-hmm. We're not going to, you know, that doesn't bother me as long as Donegal gets the stadium it deserves.
Do you know, Paul, it's amazing recently the amount of times I've heard of interventions, be it from senior members of the civil service or politicians or people that work in association with departments, trying to keep the lid on things. Don't talk about it. Don't say that. We don't criticise it publicly. It's astonishing what's going on. Like, even as long as I've been at this crack, my eyes are being opened as to who is pulling the strings. It's not a conspiracy or anything like that. But I know firsthand of, you know, I mean, that's a personal intervention with you like that on your house phone. It's really quite remarkable, but it is what goes on in this country.
Yeah, but it is the truth of the matter, and it's a matter, you see, my passion is for Donegal sport. And as someone who knows the system inside out, I know when something rotten is happening for our county. But it's near time everyone got off the pot and did something about it, be it politicians or whatever. I'm not in the blame game. I really don't care who they hold accountable. As long as they build our stadium and cut out the nonsense, it's gone on way too long. No one but nobody, and I said it to the minister, nobody can stand over a 6-year delay. No matter what the excuses, you can pull everything about regulations, EU this, EU that. I know those inside out. Nothing takes 6 years.
Fascinating insight, Paul. Thanks very much. Good to hear you doing well. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. That's Paul McLoone there, former director of Finn Harps Football Club. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Good morning to Elaine, Rosemary, Annie, Charlie, amongst those watching our show live on your smart device or your big screen TV. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, for your phone, tablet, laptop, as I say, smart TV or Fire Stick. You can catch us on Facebook too, Highland Radio Ireland or Highland Hub. And click Watch Live also on our website. You can join us there as well. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back with our next guest in just a couple of minutes. Yvonne O'Rourke is a former Air Corps captain, member of the Women of Honour, and joins us on the programme now. Yvonne, thanks so much for your time.
And Greg, thank you so much on behalf of Women of Honour for having us on. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No, it's really important, I think. The group has set out its case for a wide-ranging public tribunal of inquiry into allegations of abuse within the Defence Forces. The support group for former and current female Defence Forces members who allege they were abused within the military has published its own proposed terms of reference for the planned statutory probe into the claims. So presumably then, Yvonne, the group has issues that go beyond the scope of what is planned. Maybe you could outline that for us.
So basically with us, Greg, at the moment, obviously the listeners, I don't know, are they aware that we actually would have gone before the Minister for Defence on Taoiseach at the time, and we were presented with a draft terms of reference. Now for us, we felt that the draft terms that were presented to us were too narrow, and our main, I suppose, point that we're trying to make at the moment, Greg, is that we need these terms of reference to be as broad as possible. We're kind of alluding to maybe the, I suppose, I was just listening to Paul there, a powerful speaker before I got on, now hard to follow him, but in relation to, he spoke about sports. So we alluded to maybe even on a sports field, you have the inner circle, and the inner circle would be where you kick off the ball. And we feel that that is how narrow the we've been presented with terms of reference that are that narrow, that they only present the inner circle and they're not presenting the whole field. And we feel that if we run with what we've been presented with at the moment, which we can't run with, lots of people in the Defence Forces who have issues, who have been sexually abused, who have been discriminated against, who have come across different forms of abuses, will be excluded from actually going in front of the statutory process that will proceed here on in. I suppose for us, at the moment, what we're trying to do with the government is we're trying to actually tell them that it is a tribunal of inquiry that we're looking for. There was kind of two options. One was a commission of inquiry and the other was a tribunal of inquiry. And the main difference, and I had to research this myself and the group had to research it, is with the commission, it would be all done in private. And Greg, for us at this stage, we need it to be done in public. Mm. And that's why we're looking for the tribunal of inquiry, because for us, this will be carried out in public. It will be answerable to the public and the report will be made available to the public. And because of all the concealment and secrecy that we feel has been kind of maybe we've been kind of we do feel that we have been a lot of stuff has been concealed previously. Mm. We do think now is the time for open, transparency and all of that. We need all that to come to the forefront.
All right, so it's not necessarily the subjects within the inquiry that would be examined, such as bullying, discrimination, sexual misconduct. It's just the continuation of the cover-up. That must be what it feels like then if it's done through a statutory format.
That's it exactly, Greg. Now, what we're saying is, obviously, and, you know, a myriad of us have been sexually abused. I have myself endured sexual abuse, discrimination, and lots of us in the group have. But for us, it is the concealment and the cover-up. For us, it is a much, much broader issue. I mean, our hearts go out, like, we have people reaching out to us each and every day in relation to what they've been through. And our hearts are breaking in relation to what they've been through. And but what they would say to us, and being there personally, myself as well, is when you report certain things, it's what happens thereafter as well that is as much and can be sometimes even worse than what you've endured initially.
And I'm learning as we go here, so forgive me. I presume too also, under your proposals, it would feel like the issues are being led by the victims, by the women, rather than people having to, if they can, put their experiences into, you know, square pegs into round holes, you know what I mean? Is it, would this give, do you think, the women themselves more control over the subject matter of a tribunal?
Well, Greg, and a lot of people, and I'd like to throw that out there as well, a lot of people are thinking this is all about women. So we have to make it very clear, it's actually about men as well. So it's not just women, it's men too. And what we've always asked for was this victim-led statutory process. What we've done is people who have reached out to us and spoken to us, we've done our own version of the terms of reference now, and we've tried to encompass everything that they've said into the terms. We're trying to make them as broad as possible so that everyone will have a voice, that everyone who has suffered or endured something in the defence courses can come forward and tell their stories, and that they can be examined. We're not on witch hunt at all. We're just looking for everything to be investigated, a route to branch investigation to be done so that everyone can go forward, can tell their stories, and that they can be investigated and examined, and that the truth will come out. This is about the truth, Greg. That's all we're looking for.
And it's not for you to sort of argue on behalf of those who might oppose this, but we can perhaps speculate as to why they might. Presumably, this would tick boxes if they go through as proposed, but a tribunal of inquiry might be too wide-ranging, might reveal too much. Is that why you think it might be resisted?
Well, this is the whole question. Now, we are going again in front of the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach today. They have already told us that they are going to do a statutory process with us. They have alluded to, you know, the Commission, and they have alluded to the public, but they've spoken to us in relation to both of them, and we've done our research in relation to both of them. So this is what we will be again saying today. And you're spot on. Like, what is this going to reveal? I mean, you've heard Paul there, just listen to him, and I do applaud him, and he's saying about mistakes, and he doesn't care about mistakes, he just wants to get the job done. We want to get the job done as well. You know, his passion would be in Donegal Sport. Our passion is in the Irish Defence Forces. We just want the Irish Defence Forces to be the place that we know it can be. You know, we know what it can be, and we just feel at the moment there is a complaint procedure in there. There is different elements in there at the moment that are just not working. They're not fit for purpose. You know, people are being bullied still. People are being discriminated still, and we just want that fixed. So we would have that passion that Paul has for the Donegal Sport, for the Irish Sport.
We need to get this sorted out. It's been going on too long,
right,
and it needs resolution. Okay, when's that meeting with the Defence Minister? Or is it the Taoiseach you mean?
So we're meeting with the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach today at 6:30.
Brilliant.
And we're meeting the Taoiseach again on Wednesday. So please keep us in your prayers.
Yeah, that'll be very insightful. Okay, we'll get a good sense of where they're at after that, I hope. All right, Yvonne, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Greg, and God bless you all.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yvonne O'Rourke, former Air Corps captain and member of Women of Honour. Some of your texts coming in here. Silly question, but could you explain what a modular home is? Is it built with blocks? Often they are... I'm not an engineer or a contractor or what have you, but often they're wood, effectively, and they come on site and are slotted together and almost instantaneously create your dwelling. There's another couple of things coming in here. Hi, Greg. Don't mind helping people in need, but when you have paid taxes and need help from social welfare, all you get is the runaround, 14 weeks waiting on a medical review. And it's also funny how the post never seems to get to social welfare, i.e. forms not received. Another, as an outsider to Donegal, have any of you ever counted the amount of money pumped into the county, and especially Inishowen, since Charlie McConnell became a TD? I don't think you lot should be complaining. Driving through Donegal recently, I didn't see much evidence of neglect. Restaurants and coffee houses booked out. Couldn't get a booking in a hairdresser's or beautician's. All signs of a thriving community. It's, perhaps it's great signs of some people within that community thriving, but... you know, everyone has to be treated equally and fairly, don't they? Okay, next guest coming up for you just after this break. Now in studio with me is Brian O'Driscoll, Director of Pastoral Renewal in the Diocese of Raphoe. Good morning to you, Brian. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on.
Can you explain a little bit more before we get into the subject matter, your role and how long you've been in it? And
yeah, so originally I'm a Cork man. I've been here in the Diocese of Raphoe since just before Christmas last. Mm-hmm. So my wife and children and I, we moved up here to Donegal. So yeah, about 7 months ago. So back in April of last year, April 2022, the bishop in the diocese, they released a pastoral plan called Araig Le Chéile, and it incorporates a whole wide range of areas such as faith formation, youth formation, a hold of many more as well. And I guess my role to come in here was to drive that plan, to help implement it. Began just before Christmas. And relatively new to the diocese, but very much enjoying it.
But also a fresh pair of eyes as well.
There you go, exactly. Because I've been involved with the church in other dioceses as well, and even in a former life, so to speak, before I got married, I spent time in Rome studying for the priesthood, where I did my philosophy, theology. Discerned it wasn't for me, but again, that
Would you like to be a priest now, Brian?
Pardon?
Would you like to be a priest now with and maintain your current life?
It's challenging. One thing that I will say, and I'll say this from a personal level. So, I'm married and I have 5 young children. The eldest is 5, so it's a crazy household.
I will not pursue that any further. Yeah. You're busy enough. I can't believe you actually got in to speak to me.
That's it. I know, and it's a busy household. But I often see as well just how, and we'll see from the survey that was done recently, just how busy the priesthood life as well. And I often thought to myself, because my wife and I have had these conversations, I don't know how they would almost complement each other, because, you know, something's going to give. And I'd often think that if, and I'm saying this only from a personal level, from experiencing to some degree both sides, I think, gosh, like when I see just how crazy my own life is at home in marriage and family, and then if you were a priest looking after a parish and the commitments the priests have now are getting greater and greater with the reduction of the number of priests,
The reality might be...
Exactly, something's going to give somewhere. I mean, again, that's where I'm coming from.
Exactly, yeah. But then you could argue there might be more priests to share the load. I just couldn't resist asking
no
that
worries.
Question. Now, we're speaking in the context of a survey, which I think was really useful, because it's always good to know where you're at you see from where you've come and where you're going. It was a survey of the 33 parishes in the Diocese of Raphoe. It shows a considerable decline in those attending church and a dwindling number of priests to minister them. So we'll start with the church attendance. So what were we able to compare this to, and what was the trend?
Yeah, so to begin with, the survey took place over a 3-week period, began the 13th of February last and finished on the 5th of March. So every parish in the diocese contributed something. So my role then was to collate the results. These results were coming in. Now, when I was looking at these results, I didn't have any previous results to compare it to. But we know ourselves, they're just going back over the years, church attendances were always greater. There was more priests available. One interesting thing was, obviously, due to my involvement in this, a number of priests were contacting me, submitting the results and that. And, you know, a few made the point that they knew that things were beginning to dwindle a little bit, but it actually surprised them just how much they didn't rely. It wasn't until they did this, didn't realize the reality of the situation, which was very interesting. And it is, like, when you look at the numbers, it is going on a little bit of a downward curve, definitely. But I'll say this from an outside perspective, from my involvement in other places, where the Diocese of Raphoe is currently at, yes, there's work that needs to be done, but it's definitely not in as serious a position as other dioceses around the country. I see that from my own home diocese of Cork and Ross. Even very recently, December last, the Archdiocese of Dublin, where they had 199 parishes, and they just announced that they're amalgamating them down to, I think it's around 53, 54, what they're calling super parishes. Bishop Donal McKeown next door here in the Diocese of Derry, he's also at the moment as well the apostolic administrator of the Diocese of Down and Connor, Belfast and all that. So even, I think it was last week or the week before, he announced that for the 86 parishes there in Donegal, there's not going to be a priest to be available for even funerals or funerals from now on, and that in, I can't remember exactly, I think it was a five, 10 years' time, whatever, there's going to be more retired priests in that diocese than active priests. And again, so a lot of the dioceses around the country are beginning to look at this, and we're doing the same.
So just to be clear, and pardon my ignorance on this, how are we comparing it? So is it an anecdotal decline then? You know what I mean? We don't really know where we were. So, but the priests themselves can say, "Wow, right." When I actually looked at it, but it's an opinion. Well, we don't have a set of figures as such, because I'm just curious as to what period we might be comparing it to.
Well, this was the whole idea of the survey initially, was to take a current snapshot of the whole thing. And I know from where the dioceses were coming from is they wanted to focus particularly on the busyness of the life of the priest, in terms of, you know, in the parishes with mass, everything like that, because I suppose the one thing we are looking at are the number of priests we have in active ministry, the number of priests that are coming up to retirement. We see that we've only, I think it's about four in formation, and that, so it's a serious issue. But one thing that was that kind of struck me as I was going through it is, so in the Diocese of Raphoe, we have what we call six deaneries. The whole diocese has been the six deaneries. Each deanery has about five or six parishes. So there's 33 parishes in total in the diocese, 71 churches. And that's been covered by 48 priests. But if you look at each of these deaneries, and right now, things are manageable. But if, for example, there was a sudden death or illness or early retirement or anything like that, now in these deaneries, you're going to have, you know, we might have a parish come empty and no one to fill it. And then the neighbouring priest might have to be stretched even further to do that, because that's what's happening in a lot of dioceses. And I think that's where the dioceses were coming from in particular. They wanted to look at particularly the priests at the moment and their workload, and what, because we see it happening everywhere else. So it's instead
but
of...
we are going to see more people become unavailable than will become available, unless we change some strategy, okay? So the population that this affects, the Catholic population, have to come with the church on this, presumably to some extent, because we did see recently some of the changes, priests being move around the area, and whether it's a reality or perception, the merging of parishes, okay? And it really is very personal to people,
it is,
you know? And so do you think parishioners need to sort of start seeing where we're going? And they're going to have to exercise some understanding, because some tough decisions presumably are inevitable over the next decade, if not much sooner. But you know what I'm saying, Brian?
Without a doubt, and you make a very valid point there. And I know from my own conversations with the bishop, that's exactly what he wanted to happen. He wanted for the conversation to happen with the priest, but with the community, so people can see, look, this is, unless something drastically changes, this is the situation that's coming down the road. Because I know even, so with some of the other dioceses, when these announcements were made, it was like, whoa, where did this come from? Even though a lot of people could see it. And the bishop doesn't want that. He wanted to start the
conversation. There's a bit of foreshadowing going on here, isn't there?
Yeah, so he just wanted to start the conversation, see, look, there is change coming, and the bishop said that in his letter. But as to what way that change is going to be, whatever, we don't know yet. So what the bishop did was, when the results came in, I think it was the 25th, 26th of April, it was the last week of April anyway, he met with all of the majority of the priests of the diocese in Ards Friary just to discuss with them the findings. And he asked them to bring it back to their deanery. So, for example, in each deanery might be, as I said, five or six
parishes. The central deanery, for example, is Glenswilly, Letterkenny, Remelton, Can't read that one, and Cornwall and Leck.
Yeah,
so that's just an example of a deanery.
Exactly, and that's probably one of the smallest of the deanery. And so the priest there will meet together and to discuss it and bring it to the
time
communities.
Time has gone so quick. We only have about 3 minutes. It's not your fault. No. It's just I wish we had longer. And because there's an awful lot to tease out here. As pastor renewal, so is there a role here? I mean, you want more people to go to Mass, obviously, but that would, in a way, create its own problems in terms of future planning, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So your role, then, is it to get this information together? Is it about getting people, you know, back practicing their faith by going to church or, you know, other than laying it out as to where we might go in the next 10 years, what else do you hope to achieve or do you have?
Exactly, like right now there's, and see, even before
a lot of people change with COVID. People,
that's very true.
A lot of people do it online. You know, a lot of people now have a strong faith, but they have their own interpretation of it. And I think COVID put a buffer in there that facilitated that, if you know what I mean. Because it was okay remotely for a while.
That's
so
right.
Is it okay? It's okay now, isn't it? You know,
I know a lot of parishes, a lot of priests they are feeling. They are feeling the effects of COVID, of people not coming back. I suppose
they're not going to switch off the webcams.
No, no, that's it. And it was actually, I had to give a talk in a parish recently in the diocese, and the priest purposely turned off the webcam because he said, I knew some people wouldn't turn up, but they knew it was on at home.
So
there you go. Okay. But again, my role covers a whole variety of areas, but I'm at the moment primarily focusing on faith formation because I think it's absolutely key to, you know, just to bring people. Try and bring people even deeper in their faith, to, you know, because at the end of the day, our faith is all about a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I know we're stuck for time. I could go on with my own story around that.
Do you know
that,
what we might do, Brian? Yeah. If you make yourself available for a longer format,
so
we'll sort of see this as the pre-match analysis, right?
Excellent.
And what we'll do is maybe have a longer chat, a longer conversation.
That'd be wonderful.
Because I think it is. It affects a lot of people listening, and I think a lot of people might want to get involved in the conversation as well, and it might be an interesting process. But for now, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Very fresh, by the way. I don't know how, considering
it was
what's under your roof, but
a very hot shower and a strong cup of coffee before coming in here this morning.
But it's been nice having you on, and as I say, I think this is something that will require a little bit more conversation, and you've said you'll facilitate that. But for now, Brian O'Driscoll, Director of Pastoral Renewal in the Diocese of Raphoe, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.